It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Broadcasting from atop Signal Hill, where it's 37 degrees right now. We're looking for rain and snow showers for the rest of the day. East wind gusting as high as 20 miles per hour. 90% chance of precipitation, they say, but little or no snow accumulation. For tonight, rain and snow showers, low about 32. Coming up on the midday news, another update from the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization. Senator Murkowski speaks out about events in our nation's capital. And we find out why Alaska's high court has ruled the state was wrong to sanction a gnome man. All that and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh.
The House will be in order.
One sound of the gavel in the U.S. House embarked on its most excoriating rebuke yet of the Trump presidency. The Democratic majority sought unanimous consent for a resolution calling on Vice President Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove President Donald Trump from office over the role the one-term president played in last week's deadly violence at the U.S. Capitol. Republicans blocked the resolution, as NPR's Barbara Sprunt reports.
Republican Congressman Alex Mooney of West Virginia objected to a request for unanimous consent. Now, Democrats will bring the same resolution to the floor for consideration on Tuesday with a full House vote. If it passes, Pence will have 24 hours to respond. House Democrats also filed an impeachment resolution charging President Trump with inciting an insurrection. A vote is expected this week, likely on Wednesday. Trump has just 9 days left in his term, but Democrats argue he shouldn't remain in office after he urged supporters to march on the Capitol, which ended in violence and rioting. Barbara Sprunt, NPR News.
Concern about more attacks by radicalized Trump supporters is prompting Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser to seek a pre-disaster declaration for the nation's capital. NPR's Melissa Block reports the mayor wants the special security period for the inauguration extended from 3 days to 2 weeks.
Among other measures, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser wants the Interior Department to cancel and deny all permits for demonstrations for the next 2 weeks.
If I'm scared of anything, it's for our democracy, because we have very extreme factions in that country that are armed and dangerous.
D.C. Police Chief Robert Conti said 56 of his officers were injured when rioters stormed the Capitol.
I have talked to officers who have done two tours in Iraq and said that this was scarier to them than their time in combat.
Conti said video of one officer being crushed in a doorway made him sick to his stomach, adding that officer obviously was afraid for his life. Melissa Block, NPR News, Washington.
The National Guard says it'll increase troops in D.C. to at least 10,000 by Saturday. General Daniel Hokanson, the chief of the National Guard Bureau, has said the Guard plans to have up to 10,000 National Guard troops, with the possibility of an additional increase for up to 15,000 in D.C., to meet current and future requests for the inauguration. The U.S. Supreme Court's turning down requests from President Trump and his allies seeking quick consideration of their challenges to the outcome of the election. The High Court turning away cases from Pennsylvania, Georgia, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Arizona, all states Joe Biden won. But the conservative-leaning court, where three of the justices were Trump nominees, may still opt to hear appeals later this year. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization was unable to provide up-to-date case count numbers for today. An EOC update for Saturday reported 10 new COVID-19 cases, including 6 community spread cases, 2 travel-related cases, and 2 close contact cases. They did say today that we have had 39 hospitalizations to date, 5 deaths, and no current active COVID-19 hospitalizations. The Kodiak Island Borough has 964 total cases and 49 active cases presently. Senator Lisa Murkowski is calling on President Trump to resign. She says the violent Trump supporters who stormed the Capitol Wednesday were answering his call to avenge the election results.
People who were there to riot and who were encouraged that very morning by their president. Yes, yes, I think he was responsible.
She spoke by phone on Friday. She is the first Republican senator to call for his resignation after the assault on the Capitol, although Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse said he'd consider impeachment. Murkowski says Trump is too preoccupied with his election loss to govern. She says that might give foreign adversaries and the pandemic the opportunity to advance.
So if there is such chaos, if right now the president can't focus on anything except his own anger, then how do we assure America that we're safe?
She says Republicans who did not repudiate Trump earlier, who did not think it would get this bad, bear some responsibility. She includes herself in that group.
I allowed myself to refrain from speaking my truth. And I can't just be quiet right now.
With 12 days left in the president's term, Murkowski says there isn't time to remove the president through impeachment or the 25th Amendment. She said she will not join the new Democratic majority in the Senate, but is speaking to moderates of both parties to build a coalition that pressured leaders to pass the last coronavirus relief package. Senator Dan Sullivan and Congressman Don Young did not respond to interview requests on whether they support a call for the president to resign. Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy is appealing the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' decision to deny a permit for the proposed Pebble Mine back in November. According to a written statement on Friday, the state's Department of Law will file an administrative appeal with the federal government. In the statement, Dunleavy calls the denial a, quote, dangerous precedent that would harm Alaska's future. His Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Corey Feige echoed that sentiment in a statement saying that it has, quote, ominous implications for our right as a state to develop our resources for the benefit of all Alaskans, unquote. The Army Corps denied the permit after determining that the plan for the mine would not comply with Clean Water Act and that the project is not in the public interest. Fishermen and tribes in Bristol Bay have been fighting the project for more than a decade. If built, the open pit gold and copper mine would be one of the largest in North America. Alaska health officials have been transitioning the state's COVID-19 vaccine distribution process from deliveries directly to hospitals and clinics to a more decentralized system that relies on pharmacies and individual doctor's offices. KTOO's Jeremy Shea has this report.
If you work in the private healthcare system and want to vaccinate patients against COVID-19, it's not easy. There's extra training and tests, complicated logistics so that the vaccines don't warm up and get ruined, and a lot of data entry.
It's required a lot more than a typical vaccine.
Tiffany Foss is a certified nurse aide and vaccine coordinator at Family Practice Physicians in Juneau. She thinks she's already done 5 exams and multiple trainings for it, and they haven't even gotten the vaccines delivered yet.
Every other day, it seems like there's something else that's also required in order to obtain the vaccine. So it's definitely overwhelming at some points, but I'm glad that they're being as thorough as they are being with it.
Voss says she thinks her practice will get some vaccines in February. State Immunization Program Manager Matt Bobo says right now there are 420 providers enrolled as vaccinators, but they're not all offering appointments right now. A lot of potential COVID-19 vaccinators aren't ready to do it, are opting not to, or don't have vaccines yet. Alaska's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Ann Zink, says there are a lot of disincentives.
If you're not a regular vaccinator, it's a complex process. It's hard to figure out how to, initially do backtrack.
That's a system for ordering vaccines and for tracking the distribution.
It's not like a flu vaccine that is a one dose. It's very finicky. It has to be stored at the right temperatures. It has to be used in a certain period of time. We have to track what goes in and comes out. And so there's a lot of processes to that. And so particularly those who don't vaccinate on a regular basis, it's a big lift.
There's also an exhaustion factor.
These are also people who have been, you know, sprinting since last year, to completely changing their entire world, trying to figure out how to test, how to respond, worried they were going to die. Like this has been stressful for all of us and healthcare too. And so to say, okay, keep testing and also do vaccine. There's some clinics which is like, I can't, I don't have the space and capacity to do this anymore.
Vaccinators also must agree to administer it to anyone eligible. Right now, that's mostly people 65 and up and frontline healthcare workers. So a pediatrics clinic, for example, would have to vaccinate people other than the kids they normally see. Zinc and other public health officials have said it's an imperfect system. Economist Kevin Barry says because the federal government failed to plan and support a coordinated vaccination campaign, this may be the best way. For example, Barry says Army medics and National Guard members could have been trained for mass vaccinations.
And that needed to happen before we got to this point, not now. And so I think you're thinking about the largest body of people who can administer vaccines quickly and safely and know how to handle things that, you know, need to be delivered and kept at negative 80 degrees Fahrenheit and administered safely following all these medical procedures. You're talking about pharmacists and you're talking about these people at Walgreens.
Barry is an assistant professor of economics at the University of Alaska Anchorage. Since about 2012, he's studied the economics of social distancing and pandemics. So when COVID-19 swept the globe, he had mixed feelings.
And it was super predictable how it happened too. The whole thing's quite disappointing. It is like, finally I'm relevant, basically because nobody read any of my work about how to stop this.
Right now, Barry's concerned that if vaccinations go too slowly, the risk goes up that the entire effort will fail, especially with faster spreading coronavirus variants emerging, like the one out of the United Kingdom. When preventable spread isn't prevented,
they're also taking extra rolls of the dice as far as mutations that can make the disease worse. And so this movement to the private sector that gets vaccines in people's arms faster is good because it reduces the risk that we're going to wind up in trouble with a new variant of the disease that is even worse than what we've seen so far.
There's a lot of good reasons for providers to step up, too. They want to help their patients and communities. And individual healthcare workers who volunteer in an upcoming mass vaccination event would become eligible themselves for the vaccine. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Alaska's highest court has ruled the state was wrong to sanction a Nome man over an open letter to a newspaper he wrote in advance of a Native Corporations board election. But as Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, justices did not rule on the broader constitutional issues of free speech for Native Corporation shareholders.
The state's financial regulator fined Austin Amasok $1,500 for a letter to the editor he had published in the Nome Nugget in 2017. They said he should have filed paperwork under regulations that require shareholders to disclose their connections before soliciting votes, called proxies. Austin Amasok argued that his letter wasn't supporting or criticizing any individuals running to lead the Village Corporation, of which he's a shareholder. Susan Orlansky argued the case on Amasok's behalf.
Nobody's looking for votes for particular slates or particular candidates because we don't even know who's running. The notion that that fits within the definition of a proxy solicitation troubled the Supreme Court.
Rather, he'd encouraged fellow shareholders with voting powers not to file discretionary proxies. Those are basically blank ballots that can later be used by a slate of candidates, usually endorsed by the sitting board of directors. Critics say blank ballots handed to the board slate give incumbents an advantage over independent challengers. Some justices were skeptical when, under questioning last year, the state's attorney conceded that even an open letter urging shareholders to attend a meeting technically falls under regulated speech. Acting on complaints, state financial regulators routinely investigate and sanction shareholders for comments made in print and online that are perceived to sway a corporate board election, like an opinion piece in a newspaper, but more often it's an online post in a Facebook shareholder forum. Sitnasauk Native Corporation wasn't party to the lawsuit, but some of the state's regional Native corporations filed briefs supporting the state's power to regulate shareholder speech. Doyen and the Bristol Bay Native Corporation were among them. Orlansky says it's good to have this decision to guide future actions.
I would say that lawyers for other shareholders, as well as lawyers for the division or for Native corporations, ought to read this decision very carefully, because I think the decision holds some suggestions.
Orlansky says the Alaska Supreme Court ruling is a win for her client, and she says the justice's decision outlines how the state's regulations potentially fall afoul of the U.S. Constitution on free speech and due process grounds.
But the Supreme Court very clearly didn't decide those questions. It did what courts often do and decide the issue in front of it, and very specifically, nothing further.
The state says it's reviewing the court's decision. An Alaska Department of Law spokeswoman noted state financial regulators continue to have authority over ANCSA shareholders' public communications, even if they're in the press or on social media. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Sitka's Baranoff Elementary School appears likely to have its name changed, but what that new name will be, no one is quite sure yet. The Sitka School Board recently decided to send the question of the name change to the Sitka Tribe in hopes of identifying a significant local cultural educator. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this report.
The hardest part about renaming the Baranoff Elementary School will be who to name it for. At their last meeting on January 6th, Sitka School Board members reported that their email was running near 100% in favor of naming the building after someone other than the 18th century fur trader who, as the first chief manager of the Russian-American Company, was the de facto governor of the Russian colony in North America. Alexander Baranoff's role in history won't ever be unwritten. But in her testimony, former school board member Dionne Brady Howard explained why honoring him with an elementary school remains a bad idea.
There are some in our town's history and in our state who have honored his legacy because they view him as someone who was an astute businessman. However, in establishing that business of sea otter for exploitation, he was ruthless. And he would have annihilated my ancestors if he had been able to.
There were two major conflicts between indigenous Tlingit and Baranoff's Russians. One in 1799, when the Tlingit destroyed a Russian redoubt at what is now known as Old Sitka. The second in 1804, when Baranoff returned with a gunship and laid siege to Sitka's Tlingit, who had taken refuge in a fort in what is now Sitka National Historical Park, drove them out, captured their village, and built his company headquarters, New Archangel, on its ruins. It's this history that makes the current name of the elementary school intolerable to Sitka's native community. Muriel Reed put it very bluntly.
The name Baranoff represents the historical trauma deeply rooted in this town, and frankly, naming a school after him is a slap in the face to Indigenous families in Sitka. It is your job to reduce the amount of environmental racism Sitka families experience within the school.
Changing the name of Baranoff Elementary as a step toward healing gained traction even before demonstrations last summer pushed the Sitka Assembly to remove a Baranoff statue from in front of the Centennial Building and place it in the museum inside. Doug Osborne spoke on behalf of the Sitka Community Health Summit Coalition working on historical trauma. He offered $3,000 to help cover any costs, such as a facilitated community meeting, that the board might incur during the process. "We're in this 100%, he told them. Alaska Native Sisterhood Grand Camp President Paulette Moreno also urged the board to approach the issue deliberately, but not too deliberately.
I thank you for coming to this, and my only advice is that this be a process that is well thought out, well planned, but also it is well overdue.
So who to name Sitka's elementary school for? Although it was just a board discussion, attendees had plenty of ideas. Chuck Miller thought back to some of his teachers in the Sitka Native Education Program who propelled him into his own career as an educator.
Without the teachings of Charlie Joseph Sr., Annie Joseph, his wife, Annie Dick, my aunt, Elizabeth Basco, my grandmother, and Emma Duncan Davis, those teachers. And we still have a few of them here. Ethel Mackinnon, Ann Johnson is another one of our teachers, our elders.
Laurie Cropley also had some ideas.
Pauline Duncan Elementary School, I love. Gil Truitt Elementary School, Audigon, Charlie Joseph Elementary School. There are so many choices, so many wonderful choices.
To which Cropley added Isabella Brady and Elizabeth Pradovich. Only one board member expressed any reservations about moving forward on this theme. Eric Van Cise was behind changing the name, but he didn't want to necessarily limit the choices.
That would be my only ask, is that along with respected clinic names that people have, which I fully support, that we potentially be willing to open it up to others, you know, take this opportunity and really collectively think about what we'd like this school to be named.
Nevertheless, Van Cise did not oppose the final motion as read by Board President Ann Morrison.
The motion is to formally request the Sitka Tribe of Alaska assist the Sitka School Board in choosing the name of a significant local cultural educator to replace the name of Baranoff Elementary School.
The motion passed unanimously. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Up next, seafood without the sea. More on cell-grown fish after this.
Seafood Auction says thanks to longline fishermen and seafood buyers for a successful 2020 season and looks forward to working together again in 2021. Learn more at seafoodauction.net.
Have fish in the freezer? Have it on the table in minutes with Azmi's new Cook It Frozen and hundreds of other recipes at wildalaskaseafood.com.
Wild fish, farmed fish, genetically modified frankenfish, get ready for seafood grown directly from cells. But there's no head, tail, no bones or blood. National Public Radio calls it fish without the swimming and breathing part. It's seafood without the sea. In fact, it's sheets of whole fish fillets grown from a needle biopsy's worth of muscle cells from a single fish. The cells are cultivated and fed a blend of liquid vitamins, amino acids, and sugars. The resulting fillets can be sold fresh or frozen or made into various seafood dishes. A San Diego-based company called Blue Nalu is pioneering the cellular aquaculture as one of six companies focused on cell-based seafood. Finless Foods is focused on bluefin tuna. And NPR said a company called Wild Type is working on cell-based salmon. All are likely 5 to 10 years away from having actual product on the market. The companies point out cell growing uses no genetic tweaking, nor does it introduce anything new that doesn't already exist in nature. Blue Nalu said it's not looking to replace wild or farm-raised seafood and instead offer a third alternative. But the fledgling industry is poking at some tender spots: illegal and overfishing, climate impacts, bycatch and food waste, and as a sign of the times, they note that cell-grown seafood is free from antibiotics and pesticides used in fish farms, potential ocean contaminants, and microparticles of plastics. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. And welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 11th day of January, the year 2021. Sun rose today at 9:46. It won't set again until 4:51 p.m., giving us 7 hours and 5 minutes of glorious daylight. That is a gain of 2 minutes and 55 seconds, nearly 3 minutes compared to yesterday. Our record high was 50 degrees. That was set in 1937, and our record low was 6, set in 72. Currently 37 degrees here in Kodiak. We're looking for rain showers overnight, possibly mixed with snow. low of about 32 overnight. Southeast winds could gust as high as 30 overnight. Chance of precipitation is 80%, but new snow accumulation is less than 1/2 inch is possible. Pardon me. We just had a high tide here in the Kodiak's east side at 11:59 at 12 p.m. That was a 10.4-foot tide. And we're going to have a low tide at 7:04 p.m., a minus 1.44-foot tide. Pretty big minus tide for the east side. The next high tide will be at 1:40 a.m. of 7.43 feet, followed by a low tide at 6:38 a.m. of 2.88 feet, and a high tide at 12:49 p.m. tomorrow of 10.66 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a high tide coming up any minute now at 12:32 p.m., 16.47 feet, followed by a low tide at 7:25 p.m. of minus 2.3 feet. Your next high tide will be at 1:52 a.m. of 14.9 feet. The low tide on the west side for tomorrow morning will be at 7:29 a.m., 2.9 feet, followed by a high tide at 1:23 p.m. on the west side, 16.9 feet. Mariners, here is your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 963 millibar low 216 nautical miles southwest of Kodiak City will move to 110 nautical miles southwest of Kodiak City and go to 970 millibars tomorrow. The low will then move to Bristol Bay and go to 991 millibars on Wednesday. A fast-moving low. Our resulting weather, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, small craft advisory through Tuesday. Southeast wind to 20 knots, seas to 20 feet early, subsiding to 15 feet this afternoon and tonight. Southeast 25 and seas to 13 feet tonight for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, east side offshore. And for tomorrow, look for south 25, seas to 12 feet. Over on our west side in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tonight. Northeast wind 25 knots right now, seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, look for east winds at 20 knots and seas to 7 feet. Inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays. Chiniak Bay is east 15 right now, seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, look for southeast 20, seas to 7 feet, subsiding to 4 feet tomorrow afternoon in Chiniak Bay. In Marmot Bay, east to 20 right now, seas 6 feet. For tomorrow, look for east 25, becoming southeast 15 tomorrow afternoon. Seas to 8 feet in Marmot Bay tomorrow, subsiding to 4 feet tomorrow afternoon. You can still bring your Christmas tree by the old library site for recycling from the city. There will be a Board of Education special meeting tonight, followed by a work session. That starts at 6:30 p.m. and will be conducted virtually through BlueJeans. Meeting login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District website under the Board of Education tab. The Kodiak Archipelago Cooperative Weed Management Area meeting is happening next Tuesday, the January the 26th, from 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. That's happening via Zoom as well. It's a partnership between different entities and landowners to manage invasive plants on all the islands of Kodiak. The meeting is free and everyone is welcome. For more information and to receive the Zoom link, email danielle.butts, that's danielle.butts at kodiaksoilandwater.org. Other things happening via Zoom, yoga classes, that's happening January 16th through February 6th, four Saturdays in a row. The classes will focus on yoga's physical exercises, breathing, and concentration techniques as an approach to wellness, taught by Dana Brockman, who has taught yoga for over 20 years. The course is open to individuals 14 and up and will be best for those who have some previous experience with yoga. Props can be loaned. The class fee is a mere $40. For questions, contact Heather at 486-1212. That's Heather at 486-1212. Also via Zoom, Drawing with Bonnie Dillard. That's happening starting Wednesday, and it's going on January 13th, 20th, and 27th. Wednesdays, 5 to 7 p.m. These classes are based on the concept that anyone can learn to draw, using exercises from Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain by Betty Edwards. Students will complete activities that encourage a new, more deliberate way of seeing. They will explore pencil and charcoal drawing. This course is open to individuals 14 and up as well. Students 12 and 13 years old are welcome to register with an adult. The class will be conducted on Zoom. To get an email with joining instructions, you can get one the day before the class begins. You'll need a sketchbook and pencils. Class fee is $65. Again, you want to contact Heather at 486-1212. And meetings happening. There is a consolidation committee meeting scheduled tonight at 6:30 p.m. That's happening via teleconference, and you'll need to go to the Kodiak Island Borough website to find the link to click.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.